Kane is in the building.
Hello and welcome back to another 3P podcast episode. This is our sixth season, eighth episode. These episodes are flying by, boys, and we're just going to keep pumping them out because, you know, we love doing it and we love doing it for you, the fans, the listeners. Once again, I am your host, Josh Fromowitz, and I am delighted to be joined by my other co-hosts.
Alex Castle.
Steven Minazzo.
And we got a lot to talk about, as always. First, we want to dive into the World Series, even though all of us probably vowed to not talk about baseball the rest of the 2022 with how our Yankees disappointed us. There is some history that we have to talk about. We're obligated and contracted to talk it, sadly, and it's going to pain all of us, but you know, we'll suffer together. And then in more joyous news, we're going to talk some football, and that's going to be a good chunk of the show because there's a lot to break down there.
I also want the people to know that, Fromowitz, you're doing it from a new location tonight.
I am doing it from a new location. I'm currently in Florida, so we are very blessed to be able to be virtual and be able to not really change a thing with how we've been doing it. So
when TJ Castle and I are looking at leaves outside, Fromowitz got nice palm trees and warm weather.
It's 80 degrees and it's dark now, but if I wanted to, I could be in the pool right now with a beer in my hand, but I'm not going to rub it in too much to you guys. So
listen, enjoy yourself. And I'm glad you're still able to do it this week. That's what matters.
Hey, as a buddy of ours would say, it's a beautiful New England evening.
Yes, exactly. New England in the fall is unmatched in my opinion.
Without further ado, let's talk some baseball, boys. And I was fully prepared to go into this episode and talk, you know, what is going on with the Phillies, because game three, it really was very game one and game three was very uncharacteristic Phillies, because game one, they got off to such a big lead and then they blew it. They had Justin Verlander on the mound and he looked good, and then he just hit a rough spell, and then the Phillies rallied and came back from behind. Game two, it was really the flip where the Phillies came out, and then the Astros took over, and then that evened the series 1-1. Game three, it was just all Philly. The city was rocking. There was apparently, after homers, there was visible, basically earthquakes that were seen at the Penn State seismographs, which was pretty absurd. That was a blowout, five homers, and then game four, what went wrong is the real question, because the Phillies were no hit, a combined no hitter by basically the same pitchers who combined for the no hitter against the Yankees earlier this year, I believe in June. Those same pitchers combined for a no hitter last night in Philly on the road in game four of the World Series. The first no hitter in the postseason since Roy Halladay in 2010, the first no hitter in the World Series since Don Larsen's perfect game, I believe. Right, Stevie? You want to fact check that?
Yeah, I'll double check it, but I believe you are correct.
So, Castle, I want to start with you because I'll let the other boys chime in. I doubt you watched much of the game last night, but what do you think went wrong? Obviously, their bats weren't producing runs or any offense, but do you think it was the big moment kind of got to them, even though that's kind of a whack excuse at this point in the postseason? Or do you just think they were just overmatched by better pitching?
So I, full disclosure, did not watch much of the game last night as this whole World Series, really, you know, like you guys.
Like a true Yankee fan, you're boycotting because the Yankees aren't in it. That's understandable.
I'm not only boycotting it for that reason, but look at the two teams that are in it. I mean, you have a Philadelphia sports team and the Astros. So not much more to be said on that. I think I have to go with the pitching. I mean, specifically watching this Houston bullpen against the Yankees. I mean, they operate on all cylinders. I mean, you got guys who are young, you got guys who are old, and there's just so much talent throughout the entire bullpen. And not only that, and I hate to give Houston any credit, but I think Dusty Baker is just a great manager. And I think he's kind of figured out what the tendencies are with these hitters. And he just applied it last night. I mean, when you have guys like Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber, who are your big home run hitters, and they're going 0-for-2 and 0-for-3, I don't think with Houston's bullpen, that's just a coincidence. I think Baker took notes from the last game and really applied it. And then when you have your big hitters not producing, it's going to start to trickle down and the bullpen's going to start to pick up on stuff more. So I definitely think Houston's bullpen was just in full force last night. And I don't think the Phillies knew how to adjust.
So Stevie, I'm going to ask you the next question. The series is tied 2-2, so it's a best of three now with one game in Philly, which is tonight, and then the next two games back in Houston. We've seen streaks of how streaky Philly's offense could get. We've also seen how dominant Houston's pitching could get. But you look at the flip, Houston's offense really hasn't been that impressive, specifically their best hitters. Yordan Alvarez, since game two of the ALDS against Seattle, he's been quiet. He's batting 133 for the postseason currently. Who do you think has the advantage currently in a best of three? Granted, yes, Houston will have the home field because they have two out of the three at home. But who do you think right now the advantage is shifted to?
Well, that is tough, because if you asked me this after game three, I would have said Philly. Now, like, part of me, like, kind of wants to say Houston, because coming off that no-hitter, I mean, that is in Philly. That is huge momentum going into this game in Philly, which is the last game in Philly, and then Houston's got the games at home. However, in the past, we've seen that the Astros, I believe, the past two World Series they lost that they've been in, they lost at home to Washington and then to Atlanta. So it's not like once they're home, it's like a guaranteed win. So my biggest thing is, like,
right now it's 2-2.
Yeah.
Both teams are 1-1 at home this in the World Series. So home field hasn't really shifted one way or another.
No, it hasn't. Even though, you know, I mean, when it's in Houston, I'm sure Houston's rocking. And then you could see when it's in Philly, Philly's rocking. So I have to, I think tonight's game, game five, is really the deciding factor. Because if whoever takes that 3-2 lead, I think really has it under control. Even if they lose a following game, I think they still have, they're in still the best spot to win. So whether that's Philly, whether they clinch another win at home and they go to Houston with a game up, and really the pressure's on, you know, Houston to not lose at home and not lose another World Series. Remember, you know, Philly's not supposed to be here. Houston, not that they kind of are. I mean, going, I guess, you know, you could say the Yankees or whatever, but Houston's been a top contender in the AL for the past 5-6 years. So I think tonight's game is really the biggest deciding factor. But right now, I mean, you got to like Houston's chances coming off that no-hitter. And I think that's good momentum. You could say, well, you know, kind of, it's almost like one game, this team looks good. The next game, the other team looks good. And it's kind of a back and forth thing. But I think it's either Philly is going to say, okay, there's no way, we just got no hit in the World Series at home. Like, something's got to change. Like, we got to, you know, make our bats come alive tonight, no matter what. Or Houston's like, look at what we just did. You know, we got top tiered pitching and we got some guy, and they, I mean, they have offensive guys. It's not like they don't, they just, their bats haven't been awoken yet. And you're almost wondering, is it time that, you know, these last three games, like Yordan Alvarez is just going to go on a tear. Jose Altuve is kind of going on a tear. I mean, we know Jeremy Peña has been great all postseason long. So is he going to continue doing that? So it's kind of tough. I mean, really, I can't give you a truthful answer. Like, I don't know, I don't really have a gut answer. I'm kind of like, when I start saying one thing, you know, then the other side of it kind of comes to it. So I think, like I said, I think tonight game five is really the true, will be the true deciding factor. Maybe not necessarily, but I think, yeah, whoever comes out on top tonight, then we can get a more clear idea where the series could be going.
So I just want to throw some more numbers out at you. And then I just want you to give me, because obviously this episode will come out after game five is played. So it's not, we can't really make a prediction per se, but I'm going to throw some numbers out at you. And then I want you to give an X factor for each team for what you're looking at to put their foot in the ground and make that difference for the team tonight. For either team. So for Philly, their entire core hitters, so the Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Rhys Hoskins, JT Realmuto, they're all, Kyle Schwarber has the highest batting average among all of them this postseason. He's batting .230. You have Hoskins and Realmuto batting less than .200. Bryce Harper batting .214. No guy in their batting order. Sorry, Brandon Marsh is batting .300. That's it. Houston, you have Yordan Alvarez, who is Houston's power hitter, is batting .133. So right there, that's all of those guys, in my opinion, need to step up, because if their team is going to win the next two games, it's going to come from those guys. It's going to come from the Schwarbers. It's going to come from the Harpers. It's going to come from Yordan Alvarez. We've seen Bryce Harper have his postseason moment last round, and then what he did in game three. We've seen Yordan Alvarez, what he's done in game one with the walk-off homer against Seattle, and then game two with the go-ahead homer against Seattle. But other than that, like, there's still two games to be won in the World Series. So, and neither ace has pitched well. Justin Verlander historically is horrible in the World Series, and he's pitching tonight. Noah Syndergaard is pitching tonight, and we haven't seen him in a while. Aaron Nola hasn't been as sharp. Zach Wheeler got roughed up last start. Only Christian Javier really has pitched well in this postseason as a starter. So in this World Series, I should say. So I threw out a bunch of names, and this is going to be horrible to do to you, but I really don't care. Give me one X factor from one team and another for the other.
So I think for Philly, it's got to be their top guy, Bryce Harper. You know, it's got to be, he's, you know, they're paying him $300 million. Or was it three? No, they were paying him $330. Machado
13 years, $330 million.
Yeah. You don't just pay $330 million to anyone. You pay it to those top dogs, those, like, you know, when you look at lists of top players in the league, and Bryce Harper is one of them. If he wasn't, he wouldn't be getting paid $330 million. So for me, it's got to be Bryce Harper. Because, like, I mean, Kyle Schwarber, yeah, he's won a World Series before with the Cubs. He wasn't, you know, the biggest factor for the Cubs. You know, by, you know, then Rizzo was a star. Chris Bryant was a star. They had good pitching. I mean, he was a helpful piece. But same thing, I don't think he's going to be, like, the guy that's going to win it for them. So... And then I'm trying to think, did Schwarber win it with Washington, or did he come after that? I think he came after that, right?
I think he came after it.
Yeah.
Did he win it with Boston or no?
No, remember last year they – because he wasn't on Boston when Boston won it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he might have actually been there for Washington now that I think about it, because he was on Washington for a couple years, and then he got traded to Boston, and then from there signed in Philly. Anyways, you know, Bryce Harper's the guy that when you think of the Phillies right now, you think of like the guy, it's Bryce Harper. And we know Bryce Harper has clutch moments. You know, we know that he's an MVP type player because he's won the MVP. So for Philly, it's Bryce Harper. You need Bryce Harper to be on his A game. And you need him doing well. And then with the other guys doing well, that helps. But you can't have your best player not doing well. And we've seen the other teams when their best player wasn't on, didn't work out for them. And then Houston, I think really, you know, I think Jordan Alvarez make it too easy. Yes, you need him to step up. I really think Justin Verlander is the guy that they need to finally have a lockdown game.
Funny you say that. I was actually expecting you to say Altuve at leadoff, because
that's what I was.
When he was your leadoff guy, he hasn't gotten on base consistently. Jeremy Pena, with how he's been, I am surprised Dusty Baker hasn't bumped him to leadoff because he's getting on base. But I like that you said Verlander.
Yeah, I the reason why I say Verlander is because, I mean, you look at the Phillies lineup. Typically, besides last night, and listen, Christian Javier, I think, is, at least in this season of baseball, postseason and regular season, he's the most underrated pitcher. I mean, the dude was so good this year in the regular season and postseason. And I don't think he got enough really like hype or a credit to his name for how well he pitched. And but we know the Phillies lineup typically, like, they can score a lot of runs quick. They can, you know, they get a lot of hits. They have an explosive offense, you know, top to bottom pretty much. So Verlander, he needs to have a lockdown game. And we've seen the World Series. He really hasn't had that. And even this postseason, besides when he's playing the Yankees, he's kind of, you know, the Mariners hit him up pretty good. So he needs to be the Justin Verlander like he was all regular season, the Cy Young favorite, and where Houston knows that that the Phillies offense won't do anything because Verlander is going to get them out and he'll provide them with a lot of innings and really, like I said, be that Cy Young type pitcher where really you only need a run or two, maybe three, to win the game. And obviously Houston's offense can do more than that, but like I said, when they're kind of slumping right now, they need Verlander to really step it up. You can't, especially like I said, tonight's game, you can't fall behind to Philly's offense in Philly early, especially when you have Verlander on the mound. You need him to be not only solid, you need him to be elite.
Yeah, he needs to be that ace tonight.
Yeah, honestly. And there's no way around it. And that's why I think he is really the X factor, because like I said, if he gets shelled, then who, you know, now you're rolling with, I'm trying to think who would pitch for game six. I don't even know. I'd have to look at that, because now that rotation's kind of messed up.
Well, that's a great segue, because I would assume it would be Lance McCullers, right?
Possibly, yeah.
I would assume he's next in line. Which brings me to TJ, man of many hats. Me and you were talking about this earlier today and yesterday, because this happened game three. Lance McCullers apparently might have tipped his pitches. We saw game three, he got rocked for five homers against that Phillies offense, which looked dominant. And we saw Bryce Harper rocked one, whatever. Philly was rocking. There was an earthquake. No big deal. Well, it's a big deal. But after, we saw him go up to Alec Boehm right before his at-bat, pulled him over. The Fox camera guy caught it, and we saw it on the broadcast. What he said remains to be unknown, but there's a lot of speculation that he was telling him, hey, look at what McCullers is doing. So I want you to jump in and elaborate more, and if you think he was tipping his pitches or not, as I personally think he was.
See, I thought he was too, but then, like, the baseball fan in me was like, it's just my bias thinking that the Astros are cheating again and all this and that. But I was watching some of the clips of it, how Harper called Boehm over before his at-bat, talked to him a bit, and then Boehm and took McCullers deep. I personally think McCullers was just thrown off his game because of how rockin' the Philly Stadium was. Like you had mentioned, it rang, or it came up on the earthquake meter and at Penn State. And I think the crowd got to him. Because if you look back, Harper hit his homer off of McCullers. McCullers was in the windup. Alec Boehm hit his and McCullers was in the stretch.
I believe that is wrong. I believe both of them were in the windup. The only difference was how close his glove was to his ear. So when Harper hit his homer, it was close to his ear. It was stretched out, which made it look like it was a fastball. When Boehm hit it, it was close to his ear, which indicated it was an off-speed pitch.
See, I don't know. I didn't like read too much into that. Like, I just thought it was just people trying to make stuff up about the Astros being the Astros, as you will. But I don't know. I personally think that McCullers was just off his game, and maybe we've seen it all season long with crowd noise and the pitch calm. If he's holding his glove to his ear, he's trying to block out the crowd noise so he can hear the pitch calm. I just feel like that if he's holding it closer to his ear, he's trying to get a pitch to throw and stuff like that. I personally don't think he was tipping pitches. I think people are trying to look into it a lot more than they should. And I think the Phillies fans just had him that thrown off his game that, and it showed. He got shelled.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why this would be an instance of Houston trying to cheat, because tipping pitches and reading and trying to speculate what is to come that way is natural, and it's been around for hundreds of years, essentially, because you're trying to gain an edge on your opponent. And that's fair game. It's like when a runner's on second base and before the pitch come, stealing signs by trying to figure out delivery or reading a catcher's body language, that's all natural. And with how Houston did it in their World Series days was flat out cheating. So I don't see why this would be Houston trying to cheat, because it backfired against them. Tipping pitches in a World Series really, it just screws with them. But that's an interesting point that you made about the Philly crowd just shelling him, because it very well could have, because he missed most of this year, all of last year. The last year he's actually pitched was 2020, no crowd. So he hasn't pitched in a postseason game like this since a no crowd day. So it is very possible that the crowd played a huge factor. But with that.
Yeah, I just think he was rocked at the end of the day.
And the best part is we'll never know, and we'll continue to speculate it, because I truly think, and it seemed like it was pretty obvious that he was tipping his pitches, but it's nice to hear that you actually disagreed, because I was actually fully expecting you to say he was tipping his pitches.
As much as I wanted to, I just like the fan in me, like it just overcame, and I had to look at it unbiasedly.
Hey, respectable opinion. I appreciate that. But with that, we're finally gonna move on to football. I know Castle's biting at the chomping at the bit to be done with talking to Astros and baseball, because he could care less about it right now. He's all probably pissed off with the Giants not really making a move. But Cass, I'm going to turn to you first. Team that did make the move, and probably the biggest move, kills me to say it, was the Dolphins. And that was the Bradley Chubb trade, which, you know, it kind of took me aback, because the Dolphins defense has been pretty solid all year, especially the pass rush. 15 sacks already this year through 7-8 games of the season. It's pretty good. It's not great, but it's pretty good. Then you added Bradley Chubb, who in my eyes, is a Pro Bowl defense edge rusher. They're paying, and they made that trade so they could pay him too.
Huge
extension. I don't have the numbers up. TJ, do you have the numbers on his on Bradley Chubb's extension? Or, well, you'll pull that up and you'll interject. But Castle, what did you make of that trade? Were you taken aback too?
I definitely was, in a sense, because I actually really like Denver's defense. And
defense was very good this year. Like, it was a top 10 defense hit statistically in points. I just want TJ to interject.
All right. So it's a 5-year extension with the Dolphins. It's worth $110 million. And incentives can boost it to $111.25 million.
That's crazy. And he hasn't even suited up once for them yet. I mean, listen, you know, the Broncos, they're not going to be making the playoffs this season. I think it's obvious at this point that there's just a lot going on with this team. Out of all of the players for them to trade, I really didn't think they were going to pull the trigger with Chubb, you know, because I like their defense better. And I think one of the strongest parts of their defensive game is their edge rushers with him and Gregory, who's hurt right now. But still, when the two of them are together, that's a deadly.
Pat Surtain as a corner looks like one of the best corners in the game.
Ridiculous. So, you know, with all those factors, I really didn't expect them to, you know, decimate their defense. But, you know, they did get some picks in return. They got Chase Edmonds, which I think will help their running game. Now you got a nice attack of Melvin Gordon and Chase Edmonds. But I mean, the Dolphins are definitely taking a big gamble, not only giving up a lot of capital for him and giving up Edmonds, who, yeah, he's not, you know, Mostert is the guy, which I understand, but Mostert is also injury prone. And I think Edmonds, he's a dual threat back, which I think does work with this offense. So the Dolphins definitely are taking a gamble on this.
Well, I agree, but then they also did add in Jeff Wilson.
That's right, from
San Fran.
That's right. I forgot Jeff.
So essentially, yes, you lose Edmonds, which I guess is a bigger back, but you add in Jeff Wilson, who in my opinion is a copycat version of Mostert. Elijah Mitchell, all of those, with the exception of McCaffrey, all of those San Fran, Mike Shanahan guys are all carbon copies of each other.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And he's reunited with Mike McDaniel. So that's definitely going to give the offense some of a boost. But overall with this trade, I mean, it was huge. I mean, the Dolphins defense just got a really big boost. I'm really curious to see now, you know, if this really is going to shoot them up to number one in the AFC East, or if Buffalo's just going to, you know, continue to remain dominant. But this was huge. I mean, this is definitely what they've needed. I think, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Dolphins defense has actually faced a lot of injuries this season. So
they have their secondary, Xavien Howard, Byron Jones have missed a lot of games this year, but it's really the thing that confused me the most was their linebacker edge rush combo is one of the strong points. But I mean, adding in a guy like Bradley Chubb, especially when he's only 25 years old, definitely won't hurt them in any way. So they'll find a way to get him involved. The Jets were rumored again, and they lost the Dolphins, so that tells you a lot. But any team, when you're trading for a guy like Bradley Chubb, you're gonna find ways to get him involved, and it's not gonna hurt your club in any way. Yes, Stevie.
I think the Dolphins also did it, and you could see when they traded for him, instantly extended to that extension, because yes, they're edge rushers and something, like, they got some guys, but Melvin Ingram, he's older. You know, and he's like just, you know, and he wasn't signed for long. I think he was just signed for the year. Jalen Phillips, who they drafted in the first round in, I want to say 2020. He hasn't really, like, he has intangibles. He's got like good length and some speed and stuff like that, but he hasn't provided enough production on the field. So, you know, with Bradley Chubb, you're getting a really good, solid pass rusher that you can rely on. And I think that's why they made the move, especially when you're going against, you know, a guy like Josh Allen and stuff like that, or, you know, that Jets O-line, which, you know, I mean, obviously they're injury riddled right now, but
look at the AFC though. If they want to go through the AFC, you're going to go through a Mahomes, you're going to go through a Lamar, you're going to go through a Burrow, Josh Allen. So, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. You need a guy that, you know, that can get to the quarterback, and the Dolphins play a lot of good offensive lines. So they need that guy who can consistently get to the quarterback. Even if he's not getting sacks, he's forcing pressures and he's disrupting the opposing offenses, you know, plays and the way they execute. So I think it was a really good move for the Dolphins. And I was Castle with you when his name was rumored that they were thinking about trading him. I was kind of surprised that they did end up moving him, and that it was the Dolphins. But they figured they need picks and they don't want to part with anyone on. No one on offense was really going to get them a first rounder. So Chubb was the guy that was going to get them the first rounder. They did. And for the Dolphins, that when they had the third overall pick, when they traded to San Fran, that worked out pretty well. It got them Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Bradley Chubb. So you can't complain about that. I mean, you got two of the best, probably the best receiver in football playing right now, Tyreek Hill. He's having like the best season for receiver so far. Waddle has been just, you know, has been really, really, really good.
Arguably the best number two receiver in all football.
Yep. And then
say they're the best 1-2 punch at this point.
Oh, for sure. And the most dynamic, probably the most explosive. So like those two together. And then Bradley Chubb for a guy, Trey Lance, who the 49ers have barely played. So what a move by their GM. And the Dolphins, they got some serious guys. They can definitely contend. So I think it was really not only a good move for this year, but for, you know, the next couple of years.
Yeah, considering how young all of those guys are, even Tyreek Hill, people forget he's not even 30. I think he's only 27, 28 at this point.
Wow.
But Stevie, longer. For real. Stevie boy, though, there's a move that I want to talk to you about. Actually, a couple. That looks beautiful, TJ, that at Rangers New Jersey is. But Stevie boy, there's a few trades I want to talk to you about. Two on defense, one on offense. Your Chi-Town Bears parted ways, sent Roquan Smith to Baltimore. You sent Robert Quinn to Philly, but you're helping out Mr. Justin Fields by bringing in Castle's favorite wide receiver from the Pittsburgh Steelers, Chase Claypool, who Castle was very vocal about making sure the Giants wouldn't get him.
And I'm glad we didn't, by the way. Sorry, but I'm very glad we didn't get
him. If I'm reading your body language correctly, it seems like you're okay with Robert Quinn being gone, correct?
Oh, totally, yes.
Roquan Smith, I think that was a bittersweet moment.
Yes.
Chase Claypool, probably very excited about, but probably gave up way too much for.
No.
Elaborate on all of those.
Will do. I've actually...
You've been wanting to talk for so long, and this is your little spotlight. You have a two-minute timer.
Okay. Well, I like to talk, but I feel like I haven't really talked to you guys about the Bears move because over text it's a little too hard to kind of like really truly explain myself. So that's why right now is a perfect opportunity. So the Robert Quinn, I mean, come on, that's a no brainer. He was really good for us last year, 18 and a half sacks, lovely. But he's over 30 years old. He costs a lot of money. And, you know, if we're trying to get younger, he's not in the plans. So we got a fourth rounder for him. I'll take it in a heartbeat. I would have taken him for pretty much nothing. I wanted to move him before the season started. We didn't. And even this year, you know, yes, you look at his stats. Oh, one sack, he's done nothing. I mean, the guy was still playing well because you could see in the Dallas game, like, where he would be. I mean, the Cowboys were just running right through the spots. Like, you know, he had good contain. So we got a young, inexperienced defensive lineman out there that are not as experienced and know what to do like Robert Quinn. So that to me was really a no-brainer move. I'm glad Ryan Poles did it. And to get a fourth rounder, I was splendid. The Roquan Smith trade, I know he was rumored that he could be moved. it did kind of shock me that they really did go through it and trade him. But then when, even when, and this made me laugh, and I think a lot of Chicago reporters laugh, Roquan said he was shocked when he was traded. Well, I think you guys remember in the beginning, before the season started, Roquan demanded a trade because negotiations didn't go well. So Ryan Poles, like, didn't train before the season because maybe they could still work something out. They didn't. Roquan was playing. And yes, he was leading the league in tackles. He had some good stats and stuff like that. And he was playing really well. But there's a few games where you could see he was missing tackles or took a bad angle and, you know, could have had the guy, but didn't because so. But listen, this NFL is not like the NFL of 30 years ago when it was defense, linebackers, and all that. This is not the 1985 Bears when you wanted those good linebackers. It's nice having the good linebackers, and the Bears are known for having these good linebackers. But look at the teams that do well now. The Bills, look at their high-octane offense. The Chiefs, high-octane offense. The Bengals, high octane offense. Which is on
pause temporarily with Jamar Chase out for the next 3-4 weeks.
Yeah, it's but like, you know, last year, and then, you know, kind of they were, I mean, I know they're 4-4 now, but like when they were getting their groove and stuff like that, but they got Joe Burrow's got, you know, between Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, and Tyler Boyd, Joe Mixon, that's pretty nasty. I like, if that was the Bears, I would love that in a heartbeat. So, and then even the NFC, like last year with the Packers, high octane offense, not this year, but whatever. The point is this league is very offensively driven. And then you look at the team, like the Chiefs, cause that's where Ryan Poles came from. They didn't have a linebacker like Roquan. You look at their offense and they have so many dynamic guys, and I'm like more of last year, when Poles was with them, and I guess even, you know, I guess you could do this year, but like last year when Poles was with them, I mean, you have Mahomes, which is an elite quarterback. They had, you know, they have a good running back room. You know, they had a lot of solid receivers. They have a top tight end. They have a really good offensive line. And then defense, they have some dogs on defense and some top guys, but they don't have a guy like Roquan Smith, that linebacker. You know, they had, you know, Chris Jones, who's really solid. And then they had Tyrann Mathieu, you know, was really solid. And then they have just solid guys, you know, experienced guys mixed in throughout. So by making the move for Roquan to get that second round pick for, because if negotiations, like if he wasn't going to resign and we were just going to lose him for, he was just going to walk, give me that second round pick in a heartbeat. You know, I, again, like second round picks now are really, you know, are pretty valuable. Or, you know, cause then we would have two, you could always move up. And then the Chase Claypool, the dude, if you look at his size and intangibles and stuff like that, like, and I saw one, like, sort of like test, and he like was elite at everything between his, yeah, like his size. I mean, he's like 6'4". He's really fast. He ran like a 4.4. And if you, in his first 2 years in the NFL, he had 10 touchdowns his rookie year. Last year, you know, the touchdowns dropped, but he still had like over 800 yards. And then this year, yeah, the numbers aren't eye-popping, but Trubisky and Kenny Pickett are not stretching the downfield. And then when they were stretching downfield, the Steelers, it was Big Ben on a messed up elbow. So imagine Justin Fields, who loves throwing the deep ball, who's one of the best deep ball throwers already, passers already. And like, really, that's like where Fields, one of his biggest strengths are, is it's his deep ball. I mean, imagine that. Like, that's what we need. So to me, a second rounder, and supposedly the Packers were in on him. So why have him go to our division rival to help them out when we need a guy like him? And then the wide receiver free agent class is not good at all this year. There's a couple good like depth pieces, like a Jacoby Myers, but I wouldn't want Jacoby Myers to be our big acquisition, because all the other guys, like, it was going to be a good class, like DK, Debo, a couple other guys, but they got extended. So for me, like, it ensures that we have someone. And then now, say if you draft another guy, like say if you draft like a Jackson Smith, the Jigba, or Jordan Addison, And they may not take them in the first round, but, or maybe they'll take them in the second round. But say if you get a guy like that, and now you pair him with Mooney, Chase Claypool, and then, you know, you keep a guy like N'Keal Harry. Now that's a much better, that's a really improved wide receiver room than what we rolled in with Dante Pettis, Equanimeous St. Brown. And this just opens it up for Darnell Mooney. So to me, I think it really is a no-brainer. Yes, would I wish we could have sent the Ravens pick instead of our own second round pick? Yeah. But the deciding factor between him going to the Packers and him going to the Bears was our own second round pick, because the Steelers thought it would be worse. It'd be a higher pick for them, which I don't blame them. So I love the moves Poles made. It showed that Fields is a guy. They believe he's a guy, and that this team, you know, all the past GMs and stuff like that, and that this actually is going to be a new era of Bears football. Yes, you know, you love the era of the monsters of the midway and the top defenses. It's all great. You know, top linebackers. Yes, it's all great and cool. But really, if you look back, there's no wins. There's no Super Bowls. And that's what matters, really. Yes, you could have all these cool pictures and Hall of Fame guys, you know, at that position and, you know, all their stats and blah, blah, blah. But we want to see Super Bowls. I want to watch, you know, the Bears competing in Super Bowls. I want, you know, if you go into House Hall or Soldier, I don't know where they keep it. It's only one Super Bowl trophy. If you go into the Patriots, you know, place, you know, Gillette or wherever they have theirs in their museum, it's, you know, six across the board. The Giants, four, you know, the Cowboys, six. The Cowboys is five, my bad. You know, the Steelers have how many? So, like, you want to get to like that. So I wish Roquan the best. He was such a great player for us. I, you know, wish he could stay. But in reality, if this new age of Bears football is going to have us win games and, you know, kind of put us in the same tier, and I'm not saying it definitely will happen, but if it's kind of how it seems like it could, like the trajectory of it, if we could be like a Bills, Chiefs, you know, even not as good as that, but somewhere like that, sign me up. And, you know, sign me up. I mean, I love that. So I like the moves they made. You know, I know, obviously, and plus one last thing, and then I'll stop. It's funny because Bears fans, they remind me a lot of like New York fans, like Chicago fans, especially the Bears. It's Fields and these weapons. Poles didn't do anything to get Fields weapons, this and that. Poles gets Fields a weapon and, oh, he paid too much. Oh, why would they do this move? Blah, blah, blah. It's never pleasing them. But I support the move. I think it should work out pretty well. And I'm looking forward to watching Claypool suit up with the Bears and, you know, have that connection with Fields. And I think it can unlock it, you know, another element of his game, because in reality, he hasn't had a, you know, he didn't play with Big Ben in his prime. He played with an old
we saw Claypool pop off his rookie year.
Yep.
But that was with a very old Big Ben. And then we saw last year his numbers start to decrease. Why? Well, that's because Big Ben couldn't throw further than 5 yards. This year, the Steelers drafted George Pickens to basically be the go-to guy after Deontay Johnson. So obviously, Chase Claypool's numbers are going to be down tremendously. I love this move for Chicago. I think maybe a second-round pick was a little too much, but at the same time, Claypool was a second-round pick himself, so he could prove himself to basically be that number one guy, and then Mooney be a number two guy, which I think would be perfect. Claypool's a 6'4", 6'5", target, runs very well, can jump very well. I think he could prove himself to be a very reliable target, and he's got good hands. He's not someone with a high drop rate.
Oh, yeah, and it's not like – I mean, like we said, like his rookie year, he was so – like everyone thought he was going to be like one of the next superstar receivers. And then, like we said, just the quarterback situation in Pittsburgh was kind of messed up. And then this year, they kept going, you know, between Mitch and Pickett and then, you know, Deontay Johnson, they just like, you know, with him with the little short routes, and then they got Najee Harris. So like all of it, seemed like it just, you know, it didn't go in his favor. And that's why I'm looking forward to him being in Chicago, because he's going to get, like, I'm sure they will scheme him up to how he was playing in Pittsburgh in 2020, because if you can get that kind of Chase Claypool, then you're going to heck of a player. And there's not too many guys who are 6'4", runs well like that, and, you know, can go up and make that contested catch and fight for yards like that. Really, I mean, DK is like the only one that I would say is that big and that fast, you know, because other guys might run better, but they're a lot smaller, or they might be the same size, but not run as well. So the fact that he's a mixture of both, and it's just really, I'm just like, I you know, I keep repeating myself. I'm just very excited.
Yeah. I'm cutting you off now, 'cause you're basically repeating, but
yeah,
no, you got a lot of good points across. And Castle and TJ, I'm going to turn to you for this last part of the show before we wrap up. I want each of you to give me a trade that really shocked you, because there's a lot of trades, I believe 10 to be exact, on the trade deadline Tuesday. Was it Tuesday or Monday? Tuesday, I believe.
Yeah, Tuesday was the
deadline. Trade deadline Tuesday, but there were other moves that happened beforehand, like we were talking about Stevie, Roquan Smith, Robert Quinn, hell, even your Giants, Kadarius Toney was before the trade deadline. So which move shocked you the most? And we'll start with Castle.
Well, I think the move that caught me off
guard. Or to make things even more interesting, if you even want to say what's something you're shocked that you didn't see happen, whether it's a team not making a move or
whatever.
Yeah, I'm layering this, I know.
You're throwing a real curveball at me here. All right.
Do you want me to start to give you some more time?
No. I got this, because I've had a couple ones. I was originally going to go with the Hockenson trade, but I'm not going to go with that one. Instead, I'm going to go with the trade that didn't happen, and that's Brandon Cooks getting traded. I mean, that situation has become a total mess now. He's not suiting up for the game tonight against Philadelphia. I think he's owed close to $40 million left on his contract. And there was just so many rumors floating around that this guy was going to get traded. You know, I guess when he signed with Houston, he was expecting to be part of a team that was actually going to be doing something, but clearly they're not. And they're a bottom barrel team. And the guy's approaching the end of his career, I would say. Maybe he's got a couple of seasons left. So he wants to be part of a contender, and that's what he was expecting. And, you know, there were a couple of teams that were thrown around, the Giants, the Cowboys, the Packers. I mean, a couple of other teams I don't remember off the top of my head, but the interpretation that I got was that he was going to be moved, because it just didn't seem like he wanted anything to do with Houston anymore. And my assumption is that no one wanted to take that contract on. You know,
I think that's what it came down to, is no one wanted to take on, because I believe a lot of it is guaranteed money, which is dead cap space.
Yep.
He's not a younger guy like Claypool. I believe he's a well-aged vet at this point.
Oh yeah. I think he's been with 4 or 5 teams now, and I think the guaranteed money is close to $40 million. And so, you know, I'm sure they shopped around, but with that being said, with his age and his money, no one wanted to jump on that. And now it's a situation where the guy doesn't want to play and the trade deadline's over. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. I mean, the team that I thought would maybe jump on it just to say screw it because of their lack of offensive production is the Packers. But with Rodgers' contract and some of the other guys they got on the team, they might not be in the position to do that. So Brandon Cooks not being traded, I think that was one of the most surprising things to me, in a sense of, because of the rumors leading up to it and the reports about his position with the team. And now we know, like I said, he's not even suiting up for the game tonight. So it's going to be a messy situation. That's probably what caught me off guard the most.
With that situation, I'm going to be curious to see if they end up cutting him and letting him walk in free agency. I could definitely see that happening, because I really don't think, similar to the Cam Akers situation, where it looks like he may not play another snap with the Rams, I could see the Brandon Cook situation playing out very similarly, which is odd for Cam Akers. He's a second, third year back at this point. He's only 24 years old. For me, before TJ jumps in, TJ is probably going to say something Giants related anyway, so it really doesn't matter. I know I'm not going to take his answer. For me, and I know this one caught Castle by surprise because we're talking about this one, was the Calvin Ridley trade. That one came out of left field, and honestly, past that at this point, because frankly, I was talking to people and people forgot he existed. And to see him be traded, and I really don't even know what the trade details were. I just saw multiple picks. I didn't even see the finalized whatever. It really just is very fitting for this kind of trade. It was so random that I was taken aback, because Calvin Ridley, who was suspended this entire year for sports betting, bet on his Falcons to beat the Jaguars, which he was traded to. He was traded from the Falcons to the Jaguars, which is funny enough. And the Jaguars, we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, you see the potential there. You see Trevor Lawrence show signs of potential, and he's got Christian Kirk. He's got Marvin Jones. He's got good vets. Evan Ingram, yeah, you want to criticize him, but he's having a decent year. And then you add in next year Calvin Ridley. That is a true number one target. I really thought Atlanta was going to keep him and pair him with Drake London, Kyle Pitts, because that was going to be a very nasty wide receiver room. And it seemed like having Calvin Ridley was okay with staying in Atlanta. But sure enough, he's now shipping up to Duval and is a Jacksonville Jaguar, which I did not see coming at all. Even if he was to be traded, it definitely wasn't going to be to the Jaguars. I was expecting hell, even the Packers or someone else. That one really, really took me aback.
That didn't even cross my mind when we were thinking about trades. But yeah, that one was a shocker too. And I found the information for the trade. So the exchange was a 2023 fifth round pick and a 2024 fourth round pick that can raise on conditions. And that's the crazy part to me too, is because there's such late round draft picks for a guy like Calvin Ridley, who, like you just said, if he can be healthy, you pair him with Christian Kirk and Marvin Jones and Evan Ingram, it can be an explosive offense for Jacksonville. So that,
And we saw what Travis Etienne did when he was the lead back, under 50 total yards at the first week James Robinson was traded. That is looking very, very fun. If you're a Jaguar fan, there's probably only five of them around, but I'm sure those five fans are very excited about this trade, considering how little they had to give up. TJ, I'm sure this is going to be an expected trade, but I'm curious to hear what you were going to say.
So I was actually going to mention the Ridley trade. So we must be thinking alike tonight. But before I say mine, I just want to go into the actual conditions of that 2024 fourth round pick. So it stays a fourth if Calvin Ridley's on the roster. It goes to a three if Ridley reaches certain incentives. And it goes to a two if the Jaguars sign him to a contract extension. So there's a lot on the line here for that return. So who knows? It could pan out. It could not. Either way, they'll have a draft pick. I'm going to go with a team that didn't make a trade, and no, it's not my Giants. It's the Green Bay Packers. I am absolutely baffled, befuddled, starstruck, godsmacked. You name it. I don't know what is going on in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers has expressed his frustrations on numerous occasions ever since Devontae decided to go join Las Vegas. And every week it's the same thing. Got to simplify the offense, got to do this. Like, he's on record mentioning how, not how awful his receivers are, but how his receivers can't play to the potential. And if they're dropping passes, they should be cut. I don't know if it's a coaching thing. I don't know if it's an Aaron Rodgers thing. I don't know if it's a front office thing, but things just aren't going right in Green Bay. And a lot of people thought they were going to land a receiver at the deadline, like a Brandon Cooks, a Jerry Jeudy, but they didn't do anything. They sat quiet, didn't do anything. They twiddled their thumbs and watched every team make trades for picks and players and what have you. Yeah. Would I want them to see a trade? Absolutely. They got to do something to shake things up in Green Bay. Obviously what they're doing now isn't working. And I like how you think I was going to mention the Giants as much as I wanted to. It just makes sense why they didn't make any trades. It makes a lot of sense. So I'm gonna stick with the Cheeseheads, and something's gonna happen before they become moldy blue cheese up in Green Bay.
I like that moldy blue cheese. That honestly is a good title for the show. But I'm sure Stevie, I'm sure, is very happy that they didn't make moves, because frankly, right now, they look like shit. There's no chance that they're going to catch the Vikings at this point. So their best chance is catching a wild card. You got the Cowboys and you got the Giants already, in my opinion, in firm position of a wild card spot. And then you leave between the 49ers, the Cardinals, the Rams, because Seattle right now is in first. And I'll even throw in the Saints, because I think the Saints will make a run at the wild card, because I think the Buccaneers will win that division. The Packers stand no chance. They look horrible. And like we said last week, I'm not worried about Tom Brady. I'm not really that worried about Stafford. I am fuming about Aaron Rodgers and what the Packers are doing, because their defense looks good, but their offense is nowhere to be found. It is so boring and so basic to watch, because you know it's going to be first down run Aaron Jones, second down run A.J. Dillon, third down, oh, it's third and long, we have to throw it, it's an incompletion, we're going to punt here. It's boring, it's painful, and frankly, I really don't care, because it's nice to see change for once. But for Packer fans, it sucks to be you, I guess.
The Vikings too. I mean, I guess if I had to say surprise trade, T.J. Hockenson, the Vikings, who would have seen that coming?
I didn't.
I didn't either at all. I didn't think that Hockenson would have been moved at all, and out of all teams, to the Vikings. And it's weird, because it seems like the Lions and Vikings have a because in the draft, the Vikings traded their first round pick to Detroit, and that's when Detroit got Jameson Williams, and then now Detroit's helping them out by getting them Hockenson. So it's kind of funny that they've done two trades now within not even a full calendar year yet. So, but you know, the Vikings are just loading up, and they're already 6-1. And I got to say, they look good. And then the Packers, I think, still owes Za'Darius Smith money while he is wreaking havoc for the Vikings. So the Vikings are probably loving how they're winning and how well they're playing. And then they're probably loving to see, you know, they knew that the Lions and Bears are not any sort of, you know, someone they got to worry about. But the Packers, originally who they thought they'd probably have to worry about and chase, they're the ones who, you know, are doing well. And the Packers just can't really, you know, granted they played the Bills this past week, but it's not even just been this game. It's been all season long. So, and that's what happens, I think, when you tie up all your money into your quarterback and even the defense. Have they been the worst defense? No, but for all the amount of money that's spent on the defense and a lot of draft capital on the defense and all the
I just want to cut you off, because we are getting a little sidetracked, but I just want to say that it isn't fair to put all the blame on the defense, because there's only so much they could do and the offense isn't scoring points and they're on the field more than like 60% of the game. Like that, if your defense is on the field 35, 40 minutes, essentially every game, you're going to at some point break and allow 20, 30 points. Their defense yes, was exposed early on by Josh Allen, but that second half was very interesting. They made things very close. They did. And they forced two interceptions late on pretty good passes from Josh Allen. They just made a better defensive read. Their defense isn't bad. Is it great? Obviously not. But their defense is definitely keeping them within striking distance. And when you have Aaron Rodgers on your team, that should be more than enough. But I just want to end it there because that's fine, yeah. all the time we have this week for this week's episode. Thank you all for tuning in. Want to shout out Liberty Shirt. Want to shout out OP Sports Betting, our two sponsors. Go check both of them out. OP Sports Betting, the crypto sports betting site that is now available. And Liberty Shirt, custom dress shirt. Go check out Fox Sports, the World Series, which is on Fox. You'll see Joe Davis. You see the pregame show guys, Kevin Burkhart, David Ortiz, Frank Thomas, all those guys wearing Liberty shirts, Fox Sunday, college football guys, all of them wearing Liberty shirts. Stevie, hopefully they hook you up soon. TJ, our social media guy, keep killing it with our 3P at the 3P podcast on Instagram. Make sure you guys check that out. I'm sure he's got a post in the works in the next few minutes about the breaking news that just happened with Kyrie Irving being suspended at least 5 games. I'm sure TJ will get that up soon, as well as any more breaking news that might happen from now until this episode drops. So make sure you guys check out that. Kevin, Wild Chat Sports, great partner of ours. He's got some great stuff going on too. He's out in LA. He's got a studio. So we're very grateful and thankful that we're partnered with him. So thank you all the listeners for listening, and we'll see you next week.